Picture Syria in 2011. Protesters filled the streets demanding freedom from Assad's dictatorship, their voices rising with hope for a democratic future. Then came the crackdown, the collapse, the chaos. ISIS filled the void where government once stood. From 18 million people, 500,000 died, 6 million fled their homes, 5 million became refugees. One activist named Adam captured the bitter irony. We thought we'd get a present, and what we got was all the evil in the world. This tragedy reveals a truth as old as civilization itself. Liberty requires a powerful state, yet that same power threatens the freedom it should protect. How do we escape this paradox? 4,000 years ago, the Epic of Gilgamesh told of a king who built magnificent walls but terrorized his people. The gods created Enkidu as his equal, hoping to check Gilgamesh's power. Instead, the two became friends and embarked on further adventures of conquest. This ancient story captures what still plagues us. Merely creating checks and balances from above doesn't work. Real liberty emerges only in a narrow corridor where state and society continuously struggle against each other. Think of it like a tug of war that never ends. Both sides pulling creates the tension that keeps either from dominating. The state must be strong enough to stop violence, enforce laws, and provide services. But society must be organized enough to constrain that power. This balance isn't granted. It's seized through struggle. British suffragettes didn't politely request voting rights. They engaged in civil disobedience, hunger strikes, and Emily Davison threw herself under the king's horse at the 1913 Epsom Derby. Rights are taken, not given. The answer lies in understanding what happens outside liberty's narrow corridor. Consider the Democratic Republic of Congo, where state failure creates a bitter joke. Article 15, débrouillez-vous, or fend for yourself. This imaginary constitutional article captures reality. The state provides nothing, protects no one, enforces no laws. Archaeological evidence reveals that stateless societies throughout history experienced extraordinary violence, with death rates from warfare and murder exceeding 500 per 100,000 people, 100 times current U.S. homicide rates. Yet despotism offers no salvation. A powerful, unchecked state may prevent chaos, but it creates its own nightmare of arbitrary rule and oppression. Around 1200 BCE, Bronze Age Greek civilizations collapsed. By 621 BCE, violence plagued Athens, appointed Draco to codify laws. 30 years later, Solon revolutionized governance by canceling debts that had enslaved citizens, banning self-collateral for loans, and redistributing land, creating a society of small farmers who could participate in the assembly. While elites retained top positions, he established a 400-member council and equality before the law. In 508 BCE, Cleisthenes deepened these reforms by replacing four traditional tribes with 10 new ones, creating 139 regional units to dissolve family-based power, opening politics to all male citizens, and formalizing ostracism to check elite dominance. This exemplifies the Red Queen effect. Like Carol's character running frantically to stay in place, both state and society must continuously strengthen their capacity. If society doesn't match the state's growth, despotism follows. The more powerful the state becomes, the more vigilant society must be. Islam's birth illustrates typical state formation through ambitious individuals' will to power. Muhammad, born into a Meccan merchant family around 570 CE, fled to Medina in 622 and created a single community distinct from other people, replacing clan-based organization with religious authority. By 623, he organized raids on Meccan caravans that evolved into religious warfare. His victories increased his prestige, enabling him to remove disloyal clans, reform marriage and inheritance, and build a state structure transcending tribal divisions. By 630, he commanded 10,000 horses, compared to just 2 at the Battle of Badr in 624. Friedrich Nietzsche's will to power explains why traditional controls against power concentration fail. Some individuals naturally desire authority over others. These state builders succeed when they possess an edge overcoming existing barriers. For Muhammad, religious ideology provided legitimate authority. Athens differed because it already had formal institutions regulating political power before Solon, providing a foundation for balancing state capacity with societal control. Most state builders, like Muhammad, Shaka Zulu, and Kamehameha, are motivated by increasing their dominance, not curbing it. Without a state, societies face Hobbes's nightmare of ceaseless conflict, with no place for industry and dismal economic incentives. Even when norms contain violence, the result is typically a caged economy, constrained by restrictive social norms that distort incentives and perpetuate poverty. The Tonga clans maintained elaborate food prohibitions through totems, preventing conflict but at significant economic cost. When a young Tonga man worked hard to fill his granaries, jealous neighbors accused him of sorcery. Obligatory sharing effectively undermined property rights and eliminated incentives for productivity. Despotism may prevent fighting and invest in infrastructure, but such growth remains fragile and limited. Ibn Khaldun, the 14th century Arab scholar, observed that, at the beginning of the dynasty, taxation yields a large revenue from small assessments. At the end of the dynasty, taxation yields a small revenue from large assessments. The Arab conquests under the Umayyads initially spurred tremendous trade expansion and agricultural revolution, introducing rice, sugarcane, cotton, and citrus fruits. However, these economic benefits evaporated as dynasties aged and taxation became predatory. In 1338, Ambrogio Lorenzetti's frescoes in Siena's town hall depicted a revolutionary vision. Allegory of Good Government shows not a king, but the commune itself as ruler, with justice's rope binding the ruler's wrist, the state shackled by society. The companion fresco illustrates the prosperity, merchants selling goods, construction underway, bountiful fields, safe roads. These weren't fantasies, but depictions of Italian communes that emerged in the late 9th and 10th centuries. These city-states established systems where citizens challenged bishops and lords. Siena's government featured multiple layers of representation. The nine served strictly limited 2-month terms, while the podesta, an outsider appointed to maintain independence, faced strict constraints: no gifts, no dining with citizens, no leaving the vicinity, and mandatory post-term investigation. This institutional context fostered remarkable social mobility. Francesco Di Marco Dettini, born to a poor taverner in 1335 and orphaned at 13, built a fortune through talent and opportunity. Without connections or capital, he moved from apprentice to arms trader, investing 2,500 gold florins in a partnership by 1367, made possible by the shackled Leviathan. When Michael Brown was shot by police in Ferguson, Missouri in 2014, the Justice Department investigation revealed systemic constitutional violations against black citizens. America's Constitution came with compromises, creating lasting problems. Limited federal power meant inadequate protection for African Americans. Yet the Constitution wasn't merely elites' gift, but the product of ongoing struggle. When Southern states maintained discriminatory policies, civil rights activists forced federal intervention. This is the Red Queen effect in action: society pushing back, demanding equal rights protection. The corridor's fundamental vulnerability is that societies can exit it. On March 23, 1933, Germany's parliament passed Hitler's Enabling Act, voting itself out of existence. Weimar democracy collapsed from polarization, making compromise impossible, institutions unable to contain conflicts, and destabilizing external shocks. When Red Queen dynamics become zero-sum and institutions fail, people turn to authoritarian leaders claiming to represent the people against scheming elites. Sweden's response to the Great Depression demonstrates an alternative. The Swedish Workers' Party formed the Cow Trade Alliance with the Agrarian Party, accepting agricultural protectionism for industrial spending. The 1938 Saltsjöbaden meeting expanded the coalition to include businesses, which accepted higher wages and welfare for cooperative labor relations. This shows how the Red Queen effect can maintain liberty while expanding state capacity through coalitions. Living with a shackled Leviathan requires continuous effort. Liberty isn't a destination, but a journey, a constant struggle keeping power accountable while building capacity for new challenges. The narrow corridor remains open only to those willing to fight for it.